Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, August 17, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, back from vacation. Taylor, it was fun being away, but I got to say, I think more than any other year, because it's a truncated season, I found myself paying attention to what was going on. Normally, when I go away on vacation, 162-game season, you really do turn off the phone. You keep the laptop closed. You're not watching on television. And every day I was following the news.
Yeah, I could tell. I saw you tweeting. I saw you retweeting, you know, and this is after you got on me. You told me to put the phone down on vacation. Obviously, you're a little bit more important than I am, but I definitely noticed that. So I hope it didn't impact your time off negatively.
Man, I'm telling you, if I had been sending out pictures of the great weather and the beautiful the water at Lake George is like 80 degrees, it was amazing. You would have been jealous.
Oh,
that's
man.
What got me when you went on vacation was you were tweeting out pictures. Look at this beautiful place I'm in, subtext, and you guys are not. Oh, man. All right. So let's get the news and notes of the day. The Blue Jays have placed top hitter Bo Bichette on the injured list with a knee sprain. He was sent for an MRI. There is concern that this is more than a minor injury. Bichette leaves the Blue Jays in average at 361 on base percentage, 391, and hits with 22, five homers. He has been tremendous at the outset of his career. The Braves placed Ronald Acuña Jr. on the injured list with a sore wrist. They'd been hoping that it would get better. It hasn't. They made his assignment on the injured list retroactive to last Monday, still hoping that maybe he's going to be able to play in our upcoming Sunday night game between the Phillies and the Braves. The Nationals placed pitcher Steven Strasburg on the injured list with a nerve issue in his hand. Dave Martinez, the Nationals manager, addressed the injury.
He's going to have a follow-up Monday. They're going to do some nerve tests on his hand, so we'll see what happens. So, you know, I don't think this is going to get better soon. We tried. So right now we're just going to try to see if we can get him healthy.
And we're going to be talking with Tim Kirchner about that injury and about the injury to DJ LeMahieu, who's placed on the injured list with a thumb sprain. The Yankees are going to release more information about that situation later today. Aaron Judge, who is on the injured list with a calf issue, told reporters yesterday that he feels 100%. And it's clear he disagreed with the organization's decision to place him on the IL. Aaron Boone told reporters yesterday that Aroldis Chapman, their closer, will be activated today. They played game three of their four-game series with the Red Sox last night on Sunday Night Baseball, and Mike Ford did a Babe Ruth-type thing.
The 2-0, and that ball is hit pretty hard out towards right center field. That one back there on its way, and that is gone. Home run for Mike Ford, his second of the year, and the Yankees add two more, and it is now 4-1.
Boog Sciambi on ESPN Radio with that call. The final score there, 4-2. Oakland took care of the Giants again. Marcus Semien helping out.
Well, they've tripled. Two homers, single. Here's a deep drive to left. Way back. Dickerson will turn and watch that one fly. Do you believe this? It's 11-2 in favor of the A's. Semien unloads with a two-run homer, and that's his third of the year. Three long balls for the A's in the inning, an inning in which they've scored nine times. What a weekend for the A's in San Francisco.
They destroyed the Giants. That from the A's cast, and we're going to be talking about the A's in relation to their whether or not they're the most prohibitive favorite in baseball to win their division. A Dodgers rookie catcher made his debut in style.
He hits one deep down the right field line, and Ruiz hits it out of here in his first career major league at bat. A home run for Keibert Ruiz. Welcome to the majors in the biggest way.
In the biggest way, on your first swing, the Astros and the Mariners were tied 2-2 bottom of the ninth inning when this happened.
And Tucker hits it high in the air to right field. It sends back Moore at the wall, looking up. See you later. See you later. Kyle Tucker with a walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth. And the Astros beat the Mariners 3-2.
Robert Ford, KBME, 790 AM. The White Sox and the Cardinals. The White Sox trying to bounce back from losing a doubleheader to the Cardinals on Saturday. Yoan Moncada and Yasmani Grandal had homered in the bottom of the fifth inning. Jose Abreu was next to the plate.
And the pitch lined down the left field line, seeking the corner. And this ball is going to be gone. Back to back to back. As Abreu lines one into the bullpen and left. It just stayed fair. A three-homer inning, and it's 6-0 White Sox.
That from WGM, and you know what? The White Sox weren't done.
3-2 to Eloy. High fly ball down the left field line. That ball is hooking toward the corner, and it's going to be gone. Four in a row. Eloy Jimenez just kept it fair to the bullpen.
Now, before we get to Tim and Sarah, one more thing. The NBA playoffs tip off tonight from Orlando. Who's poised to make it through the first round? Doris Burke brings us her analysis of the playoff field. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Steamheads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirkchian on Baseball Tonight.
And of course, Tim Kirkchian covers baseball for ESPN. Tim, thanks for filling in last week when I was off playing hooky.
Well, I had a great time, Buster. Boog yelled at me for identifying that you were at Lake George, like the whole world was then going to come ruin your vacation or something. And then, among other things, Boog told me not only has he never milked a cow, but he has never, not only not mowed a lawn, he's never started a lawnmower in his entire life. And he told me if he never drives a car the rest of his life, he would be a happy man. So we learned a lot about Boog. We had a tremendous amount of fun, but he is even weirder than me. And if possible, he's even weirder than you.
I'm telling you, like, I get it that he's a city kid, but really never at some point at a friend's house, like, hey, do you mind if I mow your lawn just out of curiosity? I get the cow thing. Like, you need access to cows, right?
Right.
But mowing a lawn? Come on. Because I know you and I both have refused to pay anyone to mow our lawns. Yes?
Well, I'll have to explain that. Things changed. But I asked him also if he's ever changed the oil in his car. And there was this tremendous pause that he said, oh, God, no. Like, it was the stupidest question ever asked. So we had a lot of fun on the podcast, Buster. But needless to say, we're very, very happy to have you back.
Well, again, thanks for filling in. I got to tell you, your name came up behind the scenes during our Sunday night broadcast last night. We had on Bob Kendrick, the president of the Negro Leagues Museum. Jeff Dufine is our producer, and I mentioned to him as I was hearing Bob Kendrick's great array of stories, and he tells them so well. He's always so much fun to listen to, and I'm like, you know what? A great pay-per-view event. We ought to have, like, dueling banjos, Tim Kirkchian, Bob Kendrick, storytelling showdown. Would you be in for that?
Yeah, I asked him last night about Oscar Charleston, who Buck O'Neill told me is the greatest player he's ever seen, better even than Willie Mays. I asked him about Oscar, and it was fascinating. He knows stats, numbers, stories about everyone in the Negro League and probably in the big leagues, too. So count me in anything to help with that museum, which is a work of art.
Yeah, 100%. And man, some people are just good at telling stories. You are one of them. Bob Kendrick is one of them for sure. And Jeff, as soon as I mentioned to him, he was laughing behind the scenes and actually was going to work you in. But of course, then the third out happened and we had to move on. So last week I was having a conversation with a general manager about the way this season's playing out. And he posed it this way. He said, who is the biggest favorite to win any division given what's gone on? And in his mind, the answer is totally obvious. And I'm curious to see if you would pass his quiz.
To me, the most the easiest team to win the division is the Dodgers. I think the Rockies are pretty good, and the Padres are pretty good, but the Dodgers are great, and they're starting to pull away. So to me, they're the most obvious choice to win the division. And obviously, you disagree with me.
I'm just going to defer to this general manager who would tell you, Tim, you were completely wrong. The answer is the Oakland Athletics. Okay. In his mind, because he's watching what's going on with the Houston Astros. These guys are dropping like flies in their pitching staff. Some of the veterans on the team have really struggled. Questions among evaluators watching them. How many guys really want to be there at this moment, given all the difficulties that they're going through? You know, the Rangers aren't very good. The Angels aren't really that good right now. The Seattle Mariners are rebuilding. And on the other hand, Oakland is just killing it.
Yeah, Buster, we need to tape this again because I forgot about the A's. The A's are the answer to that question. Buster, they're off. They hit the ball out of the ballpark with anybody. Their infield defense is great. Their pitching, their power arms in the rotation, Frankie Montas and in the bullpen, are spectacular. And we just saw the Astros the other day, Buster, and I know their starting pitching has been much better lately. In fact, it's been really good lately, but they don't look like the same offensive team to me. Jose Altuve, who's a great little player, had three of the worst swings I've ever seen him take in the same game, the game we did last Monday. I am not worried that the Astros aren't going to make the playoffs. I think they'll find a way to do that. But they're not going to beat the A's in that division. If I could have answered the question again, I would have said, yes, the A's are the answer. Sorry.
We continue to get injury news over the weekend. We learned that Steven Strasburg is going to be out in the estimation manager Dave Martinez a while. That to me, if in fact he doesn't pitch again this year, then I would probably take the Nationals off the board as a team that could win the back-to-back championships. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree, Buster. In fact, I worry if they're even going to make the playoffs without him, because with losing Rendon and other injuries to their team, Juan Soto can't do this by himself, even though he's trying to. The best way for that team to repeat, go to the playoffs, do a bunch of good things in October, was with those three great starting pitchers at the top. We can't forget how great Strasburg was second half, especially last year and especially in October. You take him out of the equation, and I just don't see them out-pitching people deep into October.
Concerning the Yankees organization about DJ LeMahieu, he takes a swing on Saturday. They send him for tests. When we talked to Aaron Boone yesterday before the Sunday night baseball game, all he would say was, it's a sprain. He wouldn't be specific. He wouldn't give a timeline. He also said that unlike the 2018 injury that LeMahieu had, the same type of injury, he didn't break his thumb. So that was good news. But it does seem like that he's going to wind up going on disabled list maybe for 2 or 3 weeks. He's going to be out for an extended period. And for the Yankees, boy, you talk about an important player.
Yeah, and Buster, I loved your note last night about the first thing that DJ does when he shows up at the ballpark is he puts his hat on, which I love. And I know when he showed up to camp for the first time this spring after his COVID experience, the look on Aaron Boone's face and the glee in his voice that the machine is what he called him. The machine has showed up. That's how much LeMahieu means to that team. And to take him out of the lineup even for 2 or 3 weeks seriously affects their offense, but I think it affects their entire countenance, when he shows up, everything changes. So they're still going to make the playoffs. They're still going to win that division, but they're not the team that they need to be unless he's at the top of the order, hitting line drives all over the field.
See, what you just said made me feel good about, you know, at least being a nerd to some degree, okay? The fact that that story, I talked to Zach Britton on Saturday, and he told me that story about how when DJ shows up, you know, guys walk into the clubhouse, maybe some of them are checking their iPhones, maybe some of them are going through some mail, they're kind of lounging. His teammates have noticed that when DJ walks into the clubhouse, the very first thing he does is reach up on the hook, pull down the Yankee cap and pull it down on his head. And right. Adam Ottavino played with DJ LeMahieu, of course, in Colorado. And he told his teammates, yeah, it's the same thing he did in Colorado. And Zach loves that. And he talked about how old school that is. And I said to him, it's like that kid who, you know, on the first day of Little League would wear his uniform to the school because he wanted to be ready by 5:30 for that first game. And he laughed. He said, that's exactly what it is. And that's the type of guy he is, just absolutely no nonsense. And I've heard from people on the team that he's absolutely willing to call out guys when he feels like the effort is lacking.
Right, right. He is a baseball gym rat on the highest order. I don't think he said a complete sentence since he arrived with the Yankees, which is so good. He just keeps quiet. He says, he speaks when he has to. He shows up and kicks your butt. That's all he does.
You know, I had an interesting exchange with him last year during the postseason when I was doing post-game interviews. I can't remember who the player that I interviewed was. It might have been Gleyber Torres, but DJ was next, and he was waiting in the wings. And before we started, before the camera was ready, he looked at me and he said, hey, how was Gleyber's interview? And I said, oh, he did really well. And DJ just looked at me very plaintively. He said, yeah, I'm not very good at that. And it struck me. He wanted to know how his young teammate did. And at the same time, he was like, yeah, you know, that's just not something I'm ever going to be good at. And that's fine.
Right. And to interrupt Buster, Chase Utley did that to me very early on in his career. I went to interview him about what a really good player he was very early in his career. And he was the most boring interview of all time. And at the end of the interview, he looked at me after we were done. And he said, sorry about that. Like, I know what you wanted from me, but I'm not going to give it to you because that's not what I do. That's not what I care about. And there's certainly some DJ LeMahieu or Chase Utley in DJ LeMahieu.
All right. This was Aaron Judge yesterday talking with reporters. Of course, he's on the injured list with a calf thing. Pretty clear there was a difference of opinion between Aaron Judge and the Yankees. Give a listen, Tim.
I've been healthy and been feeling great. It was the best I've felt in a while, you know, so that's why I'm pretty frustrated, you know, being put on the IL for something that's just a couple day thing. But, you know, just working with the Yankee staff and talking to other doctors, it's just more precautionary and probably best overall to miss, you know, 1 week, push through it and eventually, you know, miss 3 to 4 weeks. So yeah, any time off is not good. You know, that's why I was begging for just a couple days, you know, not really 10 days. I don't need 10 days to be feeling good. I already feel 100% now. So, yeah, it's tough being away, especially now with G out and DJ out. It makes it tough, but it's all precautionary stuff, and we'll be back there, you know, on Saturday.
Tim, I think they were putting on a good face for the public. I suspect it was less polite, but behind the scenes.
Yeah, I was surprised because I did not see them putting him on the injured list after the people I talked to, and the next day he went on. And this is a frustrated Aaron Judge, as he should be. He's having a great year. He's been hurt a lot. He loves to play. But Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman are way too smart to make a mistake with Aaron Judge. All they're thinking about is we're good enough to make it to October, but we got to have this guy 1,000% in October. And the best way to do that is to give him a week, an extra week now. So when he comes back, I'm sure he'll pull it together very quickly and he'll be a great player the rest of the way. But I was surprised when he went on the IL.
So before the Sunday night game, I reached out to Alex Stern, who does a great job for the Elias Sports Bureau, and asked him about the Red Sox, this 6-1-0 ERA going into that Sunday game. And look, you can't compare what happens during the entire 2020 season to any other season because the context is so different. But I asked him, hey, through the first 21 games in any Red Sox season, have they ever had an ERA as bad as 6.10? And the answer is no. This is the worst. My God, they are terrible. And as you watch this team and you think about where their pitching is, I don't know when they're going to be competitively relevant again.
Yeah, Buster, they gave up 8 runs in 6 consecutive games, 8 or more. They'd never done that in the history of the Red Sox. They gave up 42 runs in a 4-game series to the Rays. The last time they did that was during that Yankee amazing barrage in 1978. The Rays had never scored 42 runs in a 4-game series. The Red Sox are setting records every day for futility when it comes to pitching. And you're right. If there were a light at the end of the tunnel, it would be one thing, but they don't have anything coming in the minor leagues. And I told you, we did a game on TV. Josh Osich started, and then Matt Hall started the next day. These are the Red Sox. You can't run that out there every day at Fenway and expect to get away with it. And I think we all better get used to the fact that they're going to be a terrible pitching team the rest of this year, and they've got a ways to go to get that corrected for next year.
So the craziest story to follow from afar when I was on vacation was what was going on with the Cleveland Indians. Of course, Zach Plesac, the team found out that he broke protocol, left the team hotel, and so they sent him in a rental car back to Cleveland, and there was a team meeting. Mike Clevenger, who's friends with Plesac, spoke on his behalf, defended him, and then the Indians subsequently found out that he also had broken protocol. Didn't mention that in the team meeting. And then in the middle of the week, Zach Plesac went on Instagram. Probably not a good idea to make his case. Here was Zach Plesac talking about the media, Tim.
The media really is terrible, man. The media is terrible. And they do some evil things to create stories and to make things sound better. Makes things sound worse. And truthfully, I'm disgusted the way the media has handled this whole situation surrounding our team.
And he sort of explained what happened in regards to the CDC guidelines.
Media has portrayed me and my best friend and teammate to be malicious with our actions when we were really, you know, not justifying what we did because we left the hotel. And according to new rules, we weren't supposed to leave. But according to CDC and these guidelines with Corona, we were practicing safe practices in a small group with people who we know have been tested and came back to our curfew late, which was 10 p.m. And clearly been exposed as being bad teammates, bad people, and dragged across the mud.
And Tim, there was a team meeting among the Indians players subsequently, and the Indians decided to send Mike Clevenger, Zach Plesac, two incredibly important members of the team, to the alternate site. They basically temporarily kicked them off the team. And from what I understand, some of the teammates were so mad at these two guys that if they had been allowed on the team, there would have been other people that opted out of the season. They were so angry with them. And that's what when I saw Zach Plesac's video, I was like, do you not understand? It's not the media criticism that you should worry about. It's the your teammates are furious at you. That's where the animus really is coming from, and that's what you should be dealing with. What'd you think?
Buster, it's easy to not like the media, but Zach Plesac is so far off base on this one. And then to do his rant while he's driving in his car made
without a seatbelt.
Oh my gosh, you're exactly right. It's one thing to go to war with the media, but when your teammates are angrier at you than the media is, then you really have problems. He should have thought that through, and that's part of the reason they sent him away, was because not only did he make a mistake, and no one called him a bad person either. They said he made a mistake, which he did. But to make it worse with that, that's the reason he got sent away. And, you know, those are two good pitchers. Mike Clevenger is a great pitcher. They really need those guys. But I was told from the beginning of this, Tito Francona told me right before the whole thing started, I said, what to expect? He said, if we start getting sick, our players, that's when you know the game is in big trouble. He said, because nobody has taken better care of the safety and protocols than our team. And that was part of the reason that those guys were dealt with so harshly, as they should have been, is that the Indians have been so diligent about doing everything right. And then those guys did everything wrong. And then Zach Plesac made it even worse.
I asked someone who has knowledge of that team about, you know, the level of anger of the players toward these two guys. And I was told that on a scale of 1 to 10 toward Clevenger, because he was not honest with his teammates in that meeting, it was a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. With Plesac, it was a 6.5 on a scale of 1 to 10. And then the video came out and then it ratcheted up to a 10. If I were, you know, advise these guys, if I were a friend of these guys, if I were an agent to these guys, I would say, you both of you have so much work to do in terms of making it right with teammates, and you better basically move forward and do everything you can to satisfy them. Forget about the media. Forget about making your pace, your case publicly. If you want to rejoin this team, you have to make it right with the guys in the room. What would you say?
Yeah, but Buster, it comes down to one thing. The best thing anyone could tell you as an athlete is you're a great teammate. The worst thing anyone could tell you as an athlete is you're a bad teammate. And right now, those guys are viewed as bad teammates by their teammates. So they got a lot of work to do. Good luck.
I was really happy that the Cardinals swept that doubleheader on Saturday as they returned to action. How about you?
I was, too. I was worried, Buster. I was worried that Adam Wainwright, one of the great guys you'll ever meet, would get hurt or something bad would happen with that much time off. I was happy that nobody got hurt, and it was just a real tribute to those guys to go out and play as crisply as they did against a good team, because, and they better get used to it because they have 10 more doubleheaders to go from here, and I'm not sure how close to 60 games they're going to get, but they've got their hands full now. And at least they got off to a good start with it.
All right, Tim. Thanks for doing this. And again, thanks for filling in last week.
It was a blast, Buster. Thank you. And if I may, all kidding aside, we really miss you. But your boy Taylor is way better than you at this. He set it up so easily that all I had to sit down at my computer, and he took care of the rest. So the big, big, big thanks goes to Taylor.
The secret weapon.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Numbers game.
Sarah Lang's a reporter and a producer and an analyst for MLB.com for the Major League Baseball Network. Sarah, you got to be an analyst on one of the game broadcasts. What was that like?
Yeah, thank you so much. Last Thursday, I got to call the Nationals-Mets game with Cliff Floyd and Brian Kenny. It was kind of a Statcast broadcast, a little bit like what ESPN did last night. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, got to get in a lot of great numbers. Obviously, it's not math class. It's not too much with numbers. It's just sort of the way I see the game, which you're pretty familiar with at this point, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's why we've been having, you know, how many years on the podcast? Like five years at this point, 4 or 5 years? Yeah, digging into all your knowledge and your information.
Yeah, I think it's 4 years now. And exactly. I mean, you know, I feel like sometimes people get turned off with the concept of analytics, numbers, any of that. But people love history. And that's like half of baseball, just talking about it, right? And the rest of it, we're just analyzing what's going on.
All right, before we play the numbers game today, I want to pose the same question to you that I did to Tim after a conversation I had with the general manager. He said to me that there is clearly one significant prohibitive favorite to win its division, okay? And I asked him the question, and he got the answer wrong, according to the general manager I spoke with. I'm going to pose that to you. Which team do you view as the most prohibitive favorite to win their division?
Interesting. Is it the A's?
That's exactly right. You got the answer right that Tim didn't get right. Because they are just rolling. And this general manager was talking about the Astros with all the injuries and different veterans struggling. He was like, there's no way that anyone's going to catch Oakland at this point. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at second place teams, I feel like, you know, it's not at all what we expected from the Astros, but they seem like one of the weaker second place teams. I mean, I suppose that the Cubs are in pretty good spot. You know, the Brewers haven't looked great, but the A's are just, as you said, absolutely rolling. And I've got some numbers about them, which we'll get to in a minute or two, but it just, they're one of those teams that feels like really can't lose two in a row, can't lose that many games after getting off to a little bit of a shaky start. But since those first few games, they've been outstanding.
Let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 10. So the White Sox hit four straight home runs yesterday, and they were the 10th team to hit four straight home runs in a game. They've done it once before on August 14th, 2008. And those were hit by Jim Thome, Paul Konerko, Alexi Ramirez, and Juan Uribe. And the only other team, to do it twice is them in the Nationals. So 10 times, actually 10 instances, I should say. And it was off of this poor rookie, Roel Ramirez, who's making his major league debut. I felt so badly for him watching this play out. Nobody expects this to be your major league debut. He was the 9th pitcher since at least 1901 to allow four more home runs in his major league debut, but the first of those to allow them consecutively or even in the same inning. And he's still a major leaguer, which I certainly am not, and none of us are. So still an accomplishment, but quite the inning.
Number two
is 4. So speaking of the A's, they won on Friday and on Saturday, despite trailing by 4 or more runs in the 9th inning against my mother's Giants. So they became just the 4th team in the modern era to win back-to-back games despite trailing by 4 or more runs in the 9th inning. The 2017 Angels did it, 1971 Tigers, and 1933 Pirates. And on Friday, Stephen Piscotty hit another grand slam, joining Rondell White in 2003 as the only players in the expansion era with a walk-off grand slam and a game-tying grand slam in the 9th inning or later in the same season. And nobody's ever had 3 ninth inning grand slams in a season. So if he hits another, and it feels like the A's hit a grand slam every week, so it seems pretty realistic, then he would set that record.
Number one
is 114.1. So that was the exit velocity on Framil Reyes's second home run on Sunday against the Tigers. It was an absolute shot. It went into those bushes in center field in Detroit. It's the hardest hit home run by an Indians player tracked by StatCast, which is since 2015. And on Friday, he hit a home run that was 462 feet, which is the second longest home run by an Indians player tracked by StatCast. And I just absolutely love this quote that he had after the game about the home run yesterday, which Mandy Bell posted up. He said, "It was a fastball right in the middle. Wow, that was great. I got really impressed. I hit that ball really far. I got it right on the barrel." And Framil Reyes is just one of those really fun guys. So for him to be hitting home runs like this and us to be getting quotes like that, I just absolutely love it.
All right. Before I go, I want to ask you about a pitcher's off to a tremendous start. Randy Dobnak, of the Twins, who I think is, he does have such an unusual background. Undrafted, born in South Park, Pennsylvania. So far this year, 4-1 record with a 1.42 ERA. Exchanged messages with him the other day about the improvement in his sinker. You know, he's always been a ground ball pitcher, but this year his rates have jumped significantly. What are you seeing in him?
Yeah, so as you said, such a great story. And he got a start in Pittsburgh this year. And I was watching the Twins broadcast, and they had all of these pictures of him like sitting in the stands as basically an adult because of his story and everything. And I just absolutely love to see that. So I just wanted to say that first of all. But as you're saying, I mean, his ground ball rate, even having always been a sinker baller kind of pitcher, his ground ball rate has skyrocketed this year at 64.5% right now, which is second among qualified pitchers behind only Lance McCullers. I think that it's really about the Twins' defense. I mean, we all expected that getting Josh Donaldson was going to help that infield defense. Obviously, he's hurt right now, but the team overall is still doing really well defensively. He got a great catch from Eddie Rosario yesterday in the outfield, 25% catch probability on that one, a five-star catch. And it really feels like the defense is helping him a lot, more so than anything really changing with his pitches. And I think this is the type of story that everybody is rooting for, but I will say his ERA is 1.42. His expected ERA, which is based on the contact he's giving up, is 3.80, which is still very good. But that's basically showing us the effect of that defense right there. It's the same concept as if we talked about fielding independent pitching, his FIP. It shows that the Twins are definitely helping him out, which is great. And if the Twins have improved defensively, that's huge. And he's been huge for them with Odorizzi being hurt, with Rich Hill being hurt. So it's a really fun story.
All right, Sarah. Thanks for doing this. Great to talk with you again.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Monday. Good to have you back. And it is a Schwenk family tradition, so I kind of want to make it a little tradition on the Baseball Tonight podcast. What was the peak in the pit of your week off at Lake George?
Boy, we had some great hikes. I think the most enjoyable one, there's this place in Lake George called Divers Rock, okay? It's like a 12 to 15 feet, depending on where the water level is, 12 to 15 feet leap off a rock into the water. And normally we get there by boat, but we found out that you can actually hike there. And we did that, and it turned out to be a hike that wasn't that arduous. And so, like, moving forward, like, all my family members who made that hike with us were like, yep, we're doing this every year. That was really cool. And there's nothing better than jumping off a rock like that, going into the water. Did it 5 or 6 times.
Nice. That sounds like a lot of fun. What's the yep. pit? What's the pit? Someone makes some bad eggs. Someone banging around a little too late for you at night. What was it? Call your family and members out if needed.
And I say this sort of tongue in cheek. I would say at the end of every day, man, I was sore. And so I was digging in the Advil bottle. But that's the way it should be when you're on vacation, right? You should be sore every single day.
I can't really relate because when I go on vacation, I like to chill. I don't like a lot of activity. I mean, I do like some activity, but I don't know. If I'm reaching for the Advil bottle, it's not vacation for me. That is hard labor. So
walking every day, 6:30 in the morning, and then going for a hike, and then playing tennis, and then swimming, and then going and doing something else, and then swimming again. I just love to get outside.
Look out, Buster, looking trim. I'm sure after all that. Let's get to the tweets. Corey Rukert writes in, are the Yankees ruining Clint Frazier's career? He could have easily been a starter for a lot of teams for the last two seasons. He will be over 30 before he even gets free agency. Are the Yankees ruining Clint Frazier?
No, I actually, and it's a great question because you're right. And with other teams, he might be playing, but it feels like that in part because of his experience with the Yankees and being surrounded by veterans, he's really turned a corner in the last year in terms of his maturity. He even mentioned the other day that in the past he may have pouted when he was sent to the minor leagues as he was at the beginning of this season, but he didn't. He went right to Scranton. He went right to work. He's adjusted his swing. Aaron Boone's excited about how he's driving the ball to right center field. He is a beast. And I actually think he's going to, you know, people keep on writing about him being traded. I don't think he's going to be traded. I think he's going to be their left fielder next year.
Next up, Andrew Campbell at Real Camp Drew writes in, hey, Buster, which lineup so far this season has impressed you the most? The emergence of the young and exciting Padres lineup, the steady performance of the Yankees B lineup, or the surprising production of the little-known Orioles lineup?
No doubt the Orioles. And that, I'm not playing to the audience with you, Taylor. I mean, we knew last year that the Yankees B lineup was good. We've known for the last few years the Padres are collecting talent. I cannot believe that the Baltimore Orioles would be in the playoffs as of this morning. That's incredible.
My guy, Anthony Santander, leading baseball in RBIs with 22 of them.
Jeez.
They're fun to watch. Last one, Knitting Daddy Greg at Knitting Daddy writes in, hey, Buster, I hope you're having a great vacation. Catch any fish? With the trade deadline approaching, what strategies are teams using to ensure they don't trade for a player who immediately opts out?
Yeah, I caught a few, but I've done less fishing this year in part because I struggled to get through the process online to get a license. I did catch one fish. My nephew John caught a ton of fish. He's a lot better at fishing than I am. And maybe after my experience with Pete Alonso, I was just shamed into realizing I'm just not very good at it. Your question's a great one. And it's actually, there's so many variables when it comes to the trade deadline this year. Will a player opt out? If you make a deal for an important player and then you give up prospects for him, what happens if the season's shut down? Are you just going to give up value? You know, what's the new financial landscape? So if you're interested in a guy like JD Martinez, is his contract going to be really outsized by the time we get to the beginning of next season? It's why I think, and we're only 2 weeks away from the trade deadline, I don't think there are going to be a lot of significant deals. I think there are going to be a lot of very small deals of players with comparable service time are dealt. But it's just so difficult, I think, this year to assess value in players and what you're willing to give up.
That does it for Bleacher Tweets. Subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome back, Buster. Happy to have you. Although Tim and Dave, they did a great job in your absence.
Well, I appreciate it. Appreciate you. Appreciate them. That's it for today. I'm actually going back up to the lake during the week, but we're going to have podcasts from there, and you're going to hear the sound of the water through the rest of the week. My thanks today to Tim and to Sarah and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we should fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.